Hello and welcome to Fantasy Talks Live, the podcast that came out of the Jose's Amazing World's YouTube channel. Original video recordings of all the episodes in the podcast can be found at Jose's Amazing World's in YouTube. Listeners beware, as plot spoilers can be discussed in any of the episodes in the podcast. Now, without further delay, enjoy the show. But yep, I think we are finally live now. So if anyone is watching live now or later on, I've got the absolute pleasure of being joined tonight by Susana Imaginario. Is that correct pronunciation there? Yeah, there you go. It's two people there already. So Susana, first of all, thank you ever so much for accepting my invite to have a totally unscripted book chat. How are you?
I'm all right. It's been a long week as we were complaining.
Right.
Oh, I'm listening to an echo.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, I can hear myself in seconds.
Ah, okay. It's all right.
How do you fix that? Wait a moment.
No worries.
All right. That should be fine. I had the YouTube open on the link because I just used the link to post. I'm sorry, my bad.
I see.
To share it to let people know that this was happening and come watch. Brilliant. That's what totally unprepared means.
Exactly. So my first question, and it's just introductory. So what's your story? Like, however much you want to tell me. So how did you end up from Portugal in Ireland running a games retreat? I read on your website and then writing a long fantasy series. What's the story there?
Well, two completely unrelated events, actually. How to summarize? Well, I moved to England about 11, 12 years ago. Lived there for 5 years and then got married. My husband has family here. We were living in Oxford in a tiny, tiny space, and we always wanted more space. So we decided to move here. We found this property. We could afford it. It was close to his parents, and we decided to do a semi-retirement lifestyle. Where we would rent part of the property as a retreat for board games, because we both love board games. I would finally have time to write my books, and he would keep doing his work. He works from home as well. And like I said, we spent 2 years remodeling the house and getting ready and writing, and everything was ready to go, and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So the board gaming retreat barely took off. Everything was canceled. Which is very, very sad. It was a hard pill to swallow at the time. And it never really took off. We spent so much effort and time organizing. And then after the year and a half, after all the lockdowns and stresses, and it was just too complicated because you can't self-isolate while playing a board game. It was just too much. So now we just rent that part of the property for tourism, and still have some time to write, and we still play board games with friends, and we hope to pick up the retreat, but we'll see. Now things are going.
But you say some time to write. You've written what, is it 5 books so far in your series?
Yeah, well, it's technically one book, fantasy books, and to be I had to split mine into 4.5 little bits, as I couldn't afford the editing of the whole chunk. And everyone was saying, well, it's better if you do a series, so you can release a book a year or every 6 months. That didn't happen. It was one book a year to keep readers engaged, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if it was a good idea or not. I mean, I I think it was because it gave me time to revise the subsequent books over and over, so they got better. But the next one's going to be a standalone. I can't invest in a series. I completely screwed up marketing from the get-go, and it's harder to get readers invested in book 3 or 4. Yeah.
No, I totally. So is the series complete then? Is it finished, or have you still got 1 or 2 more books there?
I have more books in the same universe. That book was originally was just Weird Gods is complete. Now I am working on dividing the sequence into standalones, so they would make more sense. But it's all in the same strange.
So you're doing your own Cosmere type thing.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. So how did you fall down the fantasy rabbit hole? Is it something you've always been into, or was your journey from?
I was always into stories. Let's put it this way. Fantasy story fiction. I don't know. I didn't used to be picky. It was so hard to find books growing up. It was a very small town, and there was no bookshop. So I wasn't fussy with what I read as a girl. The writing, it had to be fantasy because I was going to write about mythology, a mix of mythology with science fiction and other things. So it had to be in the realm of fantasy, because in fantasy, everything is permitted. I mean, you can have all other genres in fantasy. You can have romance, mystery, thriller. So it's just this umbrella for anything not set in the real world, I guess.
And I suppose in a way, and maybe totally off the mark here, but fantasy is sort of an easy genre to write in because you make the rules. It's your world that you've created. Mm-hmm. No one can tell you better than you how things work or how things are in the world that you've created, right?
Yeah, true. I mean, I am kind of the puppet master there. So I write about gods while playing God, I suppose. No, but it's an aspect of writing that I enjoy. I find generally, even as a reader, books set in the present time, in the real world, less interesting. So if I was going to write something, it had to be something that would keep me engaged, that I would find interesting. I like discovering this world. I like expanding this world. I like, and compared to most fantasy writers, my world building is very basic. It's just a background for the characters.
Well, you say that, but in my recent reading experience, I think that particularly most modern fantasy, the world building has got, for want of a better expression, lazier and lazier. The fantasy worlds of Joe Abercrombie, even George Martin, they are very, even Scott Lynch, they are very relatable to our mm-hmm. medieval, particularly, it's a very medieval European sort of world. Mm-hmm. And you only have to describe the barbarians from the north, and that's it. You automatically have a mental picture of what they look like, what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think in that sense, fantasy is less fantastical than it used to be pre-1995 or something like that.
Oh, well, then, I suppose. I can fault that. like I said, we've been discussing A Song of Ice and Fire. And for me, that's the pinnacle of a complete world. And yes, it is relatable in this early medieval era, but it's so far removed from reality as it is now that for me it's still fantasy. Because even our idea of the medieval times, it's not how it is presented in Game of Thrones. It's
No, you're right, but like, I suppose maybe the TV show went, because the TV show was largely filmed on real life locations. You know, some of the parts in Dorn were filmed in southern Spain, where I come from, in, you know, the castle in my hometown and in Seville and stuff like that. So to me, automatically, that puts me in a sort of medieval Arabic Muslim setting that I'm very familiar with because I grew up there. And then the bits filmed in Ireland, to you, the landscapes, and you know, I've been to Ireland a few times, it's like, okay, you know, we are in medieval England. So maybe the TV show sort of took away some of the fantasy and grounded it a lot more than
I've never felt that. I mean, I've been on in locations where they film, and I never quite mixed the two, if that makes sense. I don't know how to explain. I mean, that was never a problem. But it's interesting. I will pay attention next time.
I don't know. That's just like, that's my perception. And you know, like here, Matt, you know, yes, and that's also, I think, a fair point, that fantasy nowadays has got a much greater emphasis on character than it did pre whatever time. At some point in the 90s, you had this shift. I think maybe around, maybe Wheel of Time, although I hate that series, but maybe that had something to do with it. And then Robin Hobb and definitely George Martin sort of shifted the fantasy paradigm, so to speak.
So what would be to you a fantasy world?
So my opinion is very biased because I fell down the fantasy rabbit hole through the Dungeons and Dragons role-playing game. I started playing Dungeons and Dragons when I was, I don't know, in my very early teens. I think, you know, and also, like you said, you know, growing up in the south of Spain in the 90s, I think there was one comic book store, and we kind of imported the books from the US through the older brother of a friend, and we sort of
did our own translation.
Yeah. So I think at one point there was only, in my hometown, there was only two games going, mine and my friend's brother, so to speak. So to me, because I fell down through that rabbit hole, it was very much Dragonlance, Forgotten Realms, Lord of the Rings. So it's this super high fantasy world of, you know, dwarves, elves, orcs, gnomes, that multiracial, and I think building that is a little bit harder than building a everyone is human world, because then I think relating it to the real world is a lot easier. Whereas if you have an elf nation, then you have to come up forcibly with, like, possibly different architecture, traditions, costumes, societal norms and stuff like that. So to me, fantasy is like the super high fantasy stuff.
Lord of the Rings,
that kind of thing. And then, you know, reading A Song of Ice and Fire, great as the books are, sometimes I think, where is the fantasy here? But I do appreciate that the character work is far superior to anything that I've read before that.
That's a point.
I mean, recently I had someone was commenting on one of my videos when I was talking about, you know, how modern fantasy is very sort of not very fantastical. And this person was saying that even Tolkien is not even classic fantasy. Like, he will go back to pre-Tolkien era. He will go down all the way down to Conan, Robert T. Howard, Fritz Leiber, like that's fantasy. And Tolkien is, you know, he's not even, he was just a wannabe. I find that a bit hard to swallow, but I can see the point. I don't know. Is your fantasy definition just a secondary world and that's enough?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not fussy. I have Conan on my reading list. I really need to give it a try. But yeah, fantasy is what it's not reality, what it's not contemporaneous reality. It is fantasy. It doesn't have to have a lot of elements like the First Law series, there's hardly any magic, but it's still there, you see, and that is enough, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the First Law universe is almost, to me, that's sort of very much borderline. It's almost like a historical fiction, almost.
Yeah, but it's that fantasy aspect, the wild card, you see, because it opens so many doors as a writer, and even for the story itself, for the character arcs, it does change things when you add the magical, the fantastical.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose like some of the criticisms I've seen about the classic fantasy is that once you introduce magic can be this get out of jail free card, where whenever things are dire, whenever the characters are put in a corner, there's always the wizard that can do the magic thing that saves the day. And I think Brandon Sanderson was a response to that, where he came up with these, you know, very codified hard magic systems where you have these strict rules, and therefore the magic is very confined and defined as to what it can do and what it cannot do. Try to keep that magical element there, but not become this trump card that you can do at any time to get out of trouble. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that.
I enjoy it as well. I've read several of Sanderson books. I find them harder to read, if that makes sense. I usually listen to the audiobooks. But yeah, I do appreciate his style, and his world building is immense as well. The magic system, sometimes I would happily just skip the rules. Sometimes it's too much in all the, I don't need to know how this works because this isn't real. You know, I think I would enjoy it a little bit more with less explanations of why things work the way things work. But it is that world, and again, it's reflected on the characters. You know, we learn the magic through the characters, so it really uses it as a part of the characterization as much as the world building.
Yeah, although it becomes sort of predictable, like in, you've got that scene in Mistborn where is it Vin, the girl, the main character, when she's learning the magic, you have this whole exposition chapter, and then Brent Weeks did something similar with his Lightbringer series, where he's got this hard magic system, and you got like a similar scene where we learn the magic system when the main character is introduced to the School of Magic. So we have this whole initiation rite of passage where we have a whole chapter of exposition explained to us. So when you have those hard magic systems, I almost wish like they wouldn't explain it, that we just picked it up as we went along, and save us, that's the chapter where we're going to learn about the magic. And just, maybe just put it as an appendix at the end of the book, rather than force an exposition scene.
I bet those books exist already. Someone's done that already.
Maybe. I think, because do you think the fantasy market or the fantasy genre is saturated now? There's a lot of people writing fantasy.
There's a lot of people writing, which, I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good thing because, you know, there's everything for everyone. It's a bad thing for the writers because it's very hard to get your work noticed and find your audience. There's a lot of less than good things out there. That as a self-published author, I shouldn't throw stones, but you know, some people, I've read some books, and really I doubt they even ran through a spell check. I don't know how you publish something like that, because typos and grammar errors, that's fine. When you're just one person, or just with one editor, they will happen. I know happened to me. I'm not going to throw stones, but it is to the extreme. I've read books that is pretty much every page. It's just someone, oh, I have a story to tell. Type, 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 type. The end. Oh, perfection. Publish. And that's cluttering all the other, you know, making it hard for all the other books where people really invested into other professionals to work with them and to create, you know, this good product. And yeah. But yeah, it's the same in every industry these days. And soon we'll be all ran by AI anyway. So.
Yeah, that's we had that conversation, but I find it paradoxical that there are more writers than ever, presumably, when people are reading less and less than ever.
Yeah, because everyone is reading Twitter and watching videos. Yeah, it's true. I don't know where it's gonna end or how it's gonna end. The future for publication, for writing in general, for any sort of creativity, I guess. It looks pretty bleak at the moment. Try not to think about it.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, these sort of creative aspects that we as humans have are not valued by society, even though we really need them. Entertainment, we need the arts, but we almost like we want it for free almost. You know, you want to pay, I don't know, how much is Netflix these days? £7 a month, and you expect to have a whole catalogue of series and movies to entertain you. So it's like there's very little value added to that, but we all want it. We all consume music, movies, books, you call it. But it's almost like you have to do it as a hobby and see if potentially at some point you can leave off that hobby, but never set out to be an author or set out to be a painter from the word go, because that's not likely to end well.
Yeah, no, it is very hard. I was fortunate that I have other sources of income, otherwise I wouldn't have risked it. And I usually tell myself and I tell my husband that, you know, to look at it as an investment. You know, even little bit by little bit every month, they do sell, you know. So, I don't know, in 10, 15 years, I'll probably be making profit. But then again, I never set out to be, you know, the author. I never expected that. I just wanted to earn enough to allow me to keep writing.
I understand that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to criticize anyone's path through publishing or whatever they want to do, but I'm seeing a slight trend of booktubers that make it big. And then all of a sudden, they've written a book. And it's almost like, I don't know what the deal is. It's whether, I think some people, they have a genuine skill in the writing craft, and it's sort of like they've built a fan base first and then put the work out, as opposed to build your fan base because you put product out. And like I said, that's entirely legitimate. And I think some people have hit a big on YouTube, and then it's like, well, if I've hit a big talking about books, I must be also good at writing books. And I have seen that trend. I don't know what comes first. Like, I'm not judging anyone.
It happens both ways.
Yeah, I don't know, because you were thinking about starting a YouTube channel.
Yeah, I was. I am. I probably will. I don't know. It goes back and forth. So some days it seems like, oh, that will be a great idea. Others, I'm like, no, I don't need more trouble in my life.
Is that do you think that would be complementary to your writing? Is it to support your writing, or is it just an interest, a hobby that you have that you want to do something with?
I would do it primarily as a hobby. Like I said, I'm really enjoying these chats and the book discussions. And I'm quite opinionated, you probably noticed. I like to talk, to express myself, to give my opinion on things, to praise or, you know. And if that in some way would help my selling my books, great, brilliant. But that would be the cherry on top. It's not the reason why I would do it.
But someone I talked to recently, I'm not going to name names, told me that as an author, you have to be careful about what you say about other authors, because potentially, and maybe, perhaps, just putting it out there, someone like you who is opinionated, you make them not doing yourself any favors.
Yes. I am aware of that. But, you know, after 3 years, yeah, it's almost 3 years dealing with people in the writing community, I've learned that anything you say can and will be used against you. Any opinion will be misinterpreted or, you know, offend someone. So you might just get it out of your chest.
So, okay, but then that puts you in an interesting sort of juncture there. Did you go ahead with your channel and just try to be nice? Or do you go ahead with your channel and you try to be honest? And maybe you keep some...
Being nice. No, I would have to be honest. It would be for honesty. But to be fair, I don't intend to...
I'm not saying that you're going to purposely go out of your way to offend someone or pick a bone with someone. But
no.
In the process of saying what you think...
Yeah, and only the things I like. I have no interest in, you know, if there is, I don't know, I'm not going to say never, because it's you don't know what might happen. But that is not my intention. I will, if I find a book that I enjoy, I will praise it. If not, I just probably won't talk about it unless I'm asked to talk about it. Then sometimes that happens. But I don't want to make reviews the focus of the channel, especially not book reviews.
No, and I think in general, I've always said that the average book reader is a bit more intelligent than the average person. So I think most often than not, you can say, or I've been able to say, I didn't like whatever book or series because X, Y, Z. And then people go, all right, okay. So I'm going to give you research rather than just rant and rave and, you know, go crazy and put something out. I think people are generally accepting about a different opinion in the book community. But since we were talking about you being opinionated and then you blame me for asking, what is this about not enjoying the works of H.P. Lovecraft? What, you have to defend yourself there.
Okay, let me put this into context. Well, you know, I don't like horror in general. I mean, I don't think I get it. I don't think I get the horror bit. I'm sure I don't, or so my husband tells me all the time. And he loves Lovecraft. He's like his favorite author. And he tried over the years. I mean, so it's, the problem is twofold. Is my... me not liking horror and not relating with his writing style more than the universe. Like, I love to play Call of Cthulhu. You mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. I was never much of a Dungeons and Dragons player, but I love to play Call of Cthulhu.
I play every Tuesday night.
As well? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, as well. As in, we play like once every couple of months. But yeah, it is the same. So I like the universe. I like that fantasy world, that time period, that atmosphere for the game. You know, the books, I find them, it just doesn't connect with me. And because I'm always being fed in that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I hear you. Like, horror is, to me, it's the most complicated genre, because to feel truly scared about reading something is very complicated. And something can be gruesome, something can be horrific in what it describes, but that doesn't necessarily make me uneasy or scared. Mm. I think the last time I was talking to Steve and Varsha, we were talking about Junji Ito's Uzumaki, the graphic novel. It's like, how do I feel after I close the book? Like, if I feel like, okay, then that wasn't really horrific. But if I close the book and I'm going, oh, I don't want to turn the lights off now, or I'm going to be thinking about next time I go into a swimming pool or something, then that succeeded. And I think it's more that sort of unease feeling that you get at the end, rather than have a jump scare as you go through the pages, because I think in books that's very complicated. Which I think is, for me, horror works best in the short story format. You cannot keep that tension over 500 pages. But over 20, I think there's a lot of possibilities there.
Okay. Well, that, I guess that's another thing why I don't like it so much. I don't enjoy short stories in general, because they're more concepts and more ideas, or just single scenes. I do like intricate plots and lots right. of characters. I need time to get invested in the story, time to get invested in the character. And that's very hard to do in a short story. But then again, it's personal preference. I don't like, so I read less. If I read less, I know less about the genre. It's just...
Yeah. No. I totally get that. I totally get that. But the short story format, I think for horror works really well. For general fiction, it's like you said, it's more like a concept thing. I think I read, you know, Raymond Carver and the Russians, the one that Chekhov's tales and things like that are really good, but to me they come few and far in between. I think they're worth checking out. Chekhov's tales for sure. But no. I hear you. And the Call of Cthulhu thing. So what are you playing? Just single scenarios, or are you playing campaigns?
No, single scenarios mostly. Whenever we are lucky enough to get a group going, yeah.
Okay. No, I'm playing a campaign now. We started. When did we start? I think around summertime last year.
Well, that is commitment.
Because we play for like two and a half hours a week. So, but nice. To me, like role playing games were my salvation as a kid, as a teenager. I didn't like competitive games. There was something psychological there. I felt kind of embarrassed to lose, so I never wanted to play arcades against my friends. So I never wanted to compete against my friends. And when I discovered Dungeons and Dragons, Call of Cthulhu, it was like, yeah, this is my thing. Like, you know, everyone working together towards a common goal. That was my kind of game. And then, you know, I was very, very happy. I think that kind of saved me as a kid. So I'm very fond of all of that. I still read the novels, I still play the game, and I don't know, different people, different thrills, isn't it?
I play a lot of board games. I like board games and puzzles, and I like words, Susanna. I like to win. I mean, I like to play against an opponent. I like that dynamic. I'm terrible at cooperative games.
Oh dear. Okay, so very opposite characters there. I've got better about it over time, but I still prefer that sort of feeling. Now I'm competitive with myself. I do long distance running, so I got competitive with myself as to how far I could push myself, long distance running times, all that kind of stuff. But competing against other people still is never my strong point.
Only if it's, you know, in games, not in life.
No.
But as entertainment, yeah, I like that aspect.
Right. So what are you reading now? What have you got any series going on, or any particular author you are taking a deep dive into?
Well, I am reading A Feast for Crows. I think that's the one for the discussion next month. You don't believe, you think this is a waste of time, this reread of A Song of Ice and Fire that will never be finished?
Well, I do believe it's never going to be finished. but I think my problem with, I don't have a problem with A Song of Ice and Fire. I just feel a sense of regret that this could have been Lord of the Rings for the 21st century. This could have been the biggest thing since Lord of the Rings, and it probably has been, and we're never going to get to see the end of it. I think he may finish Winds of Winter, but I don't think we're going to see A Dream of Spring. And that's my... But I when I picked... what was the first book? Game of Thrones, right? And when I was reading that, and you know, that moment is coming, and you go, it cannot happen, it cannot happen, this cannot happen, this shouldn't happen, and then Ned Stark's head gets chopped off. That moment for me was like, this is something else. Like I'm reading something else. This is totally different from anything I've ever read before. And I loved it. The brilliant books, I think they were fantastic. I wish we got to see the end of it. I've even suggested to Mr. Martin to find some ghostwriter, someone to finish it for him. Maybe he can just give him the plot outline. I even suggested that maybe Joe Abercrombie and John Wynne together could finish the last book for him. I think that would be a good pairing.
Hello, Drew.
Drew is there. What's your opinion on Game of Thrones?
I am doing the reread because I still believe that we're going to see the end of the series. I have a feeling he has written already. He just doesn't want to publish now because, you know, they're just trying to get the most out of the prequels and keep people engaged. The moment the books comes out and the story is over, then all this interest for the prequels, it will disappear. So they are just milking it until, who knows. And if I was George R. R. Martin in his position, I would probably just wait until I was dead to publish, because he would never please everyone after so many years and so many theories and so many expectations. I wouldn't want to deal with a fallout of, you know, the disappointment, in case there would be disappointment. But I would like to think that he has it. I mean,
that is both at the same time a very optimistic and a very cynical take on the situation.
That's, I know. But that's how I feel. And I am enjoying this reread. I mean, I've waited 10 years to read it again, and I finally had a reason, so that's what I'm doing. And at the same time, I'm listening to Swan Song, which it was just this impulse by on Audible. It's not my thing, but I only have like 6 hours left, so I'll probably finish. But it started, I really enjoyed the beginning. I was like, oh, this is brutal, this is great. And then it's just been gradually, let's just say my eyes have been rolling off the page a lot. It's one of those books. It's not a bad book. It's just not quite for me, but.
You see, Drew thinks. I don't think so. I think my take is a lot more pessimistic. I think this guy had been trying for so long, for so many years, because he used to write for television. He's been writing books since the 70s. And then he's finally hit it big. He's finally made his money. And he's enjoying the money. He's bought himself a cinema in his hometown. He's bought himself a train in his hometown. Now he just runs a Song of Ice and Fire enterprise. And in his spare time, he writes a paragraph for crying out loud. Even if he had written a page a day, even if written a page a week, it would have finished by now, Winds of Winter.
So that's why I do believe it is finished, or very near.
Okay. Maybe.
Why wouldn't he finish? I mean, if you put so much effort into building that world, and there's so many details from the beginning. I mean, it's very hard for a writer to leave a story and finish. You realize that? You really need to finish it.
But maybe, like you said, he is afraid of finishing the story. Because after all the theories, after all the questions, after all the... If he's not going to be able to deliver a satisfying ending, maybe he just won't do it. And like he's called himself in the past, he's a discovery writer. He sort of goes along and see where the story takes him. He hasn't got it all mapped out. So maybe he's hit a couple of stumbling blocks. Maybe, you know, all of a sudden he's a multi-millionaire and, you know, enjoy life.
Because he wrote loads before writing Game of Thrones. I mean, he's been writing probably for longer than I've been alive. He's had, you know, bestsellers and failures. And, you know, I think he wouldn't be suffering from a writer's block if, you know, if just suddenly, oh, there's a plot hole. You know, he has the skill to fix plot holes to finish the story.
And don't get me wrong, I think there's so much hunger for those books that I think people will just lap up whatever he put out.
Yeah, whatever he put out, it would definitely sell.
Yeah,
it's just but then you have to go and do interviews and talk to people, and that's, you know, maybe he just wants to avoid all that because, like you said, he doesn't need it anymore.
No, I can see where you're coming from. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. I would like to be wrong, and I would love it for you to be right, because that means we'll have the best fantasy series since Lord of the Rings, and that'll be awesome. And then I will reread them again. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't know. So who be your... You know, easy question, like, what are your top five series or book, like fantasy books?
Easy question. Okay, The Song of Ice and Fire, since we were talking about it. The Expanse, I really enjoyed that one as well as a book series. Broken Earth, top five. It's right now it's top five because I'm sure I'm missing loads. It's not an easy question. You have to go and catalog.
No, it's an easy question. It's a difficult answer.
Good point. Yes, I'm cataloging everything. First Law, of course.
Yeah.
Both and the Edge of Madness. Nevernight, enjoyed that one too. Yeah, five. It takes me a while, and then I'll just start.
I can. Yeah, Broken Earth has been on my radar for a while. The box set has been on my Amazon wish list for the last 4 years, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. But the moment I just feel a little bit saturated with fantasy, it's almost like I need a few months of just reading crappy bestseller novels, reading. I don't know, just something different. I need to come back to it with a clear mind. I think the last few years, that's almost like all I've been reading. And not finding something overly satisfying has sucked out the enjoyment a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm. No, I do that all the time. My my palate cleans, and it's usually historical fiction. So
right. So what? Yeah. What in particular? Historical fiction.
Well, anything pretty much from Bernard Cromwell.
So, oh yeah.
The Warlock Chronicles, The Last Kingdom. I enjoy that. Outlander. It's more historical fantasy. I don't know where to put it. Yeah, it's usually I go back into the past.
Right, you got a question there from Drew. Daniel Abraham.
No, I don't think I have. I knew he was his assistant, but no, I don't think I have. Can you suggest something?
I'm sure he can. I'm sure.
There comes a list.
Yeah. I'm sure Drew is ready there with that. Yeah, no, sci-fi has never been an appeal to me. Something I've mentioned quite a few times in all these conversations. Like, I'm happy to take fantasy, dragons, all that kind of stuff. But if you take me into outer space, I don't know. I struggle a lot more with that.
I don't know. So instead of elves and dwarves, you'd have aliens?
No. I totally am fully aware of how incongruent and inconsistent I sound. Don't get me wrong. I am aware. Except, like, I've read Dune, but Dune reads more like a classic fantasy book than a sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Maybe when I think sci-fi, I'm thinking more Asimov, or I'm thinking more Philip K. Dick.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm reading the Sun Eater series, and that reads more like a fantasy book than a sci-fi story. It's this
and what about space operas?
What about, sorry?
Space operas.
I think that's what Sun Eater is trying to be. It's meant to be like a seven-book series. And
okay, I've never read that one. So.
It's not finished yet. I think only the first five books are out. And he's trying to be that. But I struggle with the concepts of traveling through space and the relativity of time. Like that, or like when a character says that they are in a rush, but they've spent 100 years, you know, frozen to travel from one planet to another, like you cannot be in a rush to get anywhere because it's taking you 100 years to get there. So I don't know. I struggle with the physics of the whole thing.
I don't know, but I'm starting to find it very interesting.
Yeah.
Long price card. Never heard of.
Anyone, you see? Drew what? Would have an answer.
Long price card. I will make a note.
Yeah. That's the... because like now I'm reading book three of the Sun Eater. And it kind of... Something you said before, and I'm relating it to the book, like... In fantasy, you can do whatever you want. So like kind of the first third of the book is a bit more like a sort of horror aliens sort of situation where they're in a spaceship and there's this big horrid, you know, alien thing hunting them. But then the next third of the book seems to be more like a sort of political thriller type thing. Mm-hmm. So it is switching and turning and changing sort of themes or setting within the same book. I don't know what the third, the final third of the book is going to be like. But yeah, it does different, very different things within the same book because the fantasy allows you to do whatever you want effectively.
I find that exciting as a writer and entertaining as a reader. So it is one of the reasons.
So I'm just going to take the conversation way back to the beginning. So you grew up in Portugal in a small town.
Yes. I
don't know what things were like. What sort of books did you grow up with? What was available at the time?
Well, we had not much. We had all the Portuguese classics, of course. That we mostly read in school. I would read, those adventure books, maybe with a group of friends that would go on a on adventure. I think I read the whole series once I found it. It was only after I started to understand English that I started reading in earnest, because I started reading. There was this shop, it wasn't a bookshop, it was this kiosk for tourists, because it's by the beach, so you could get, you know, the daily Irish and English newspapers. You couldn't get books, but they created this shelf and they had the whole Penguin Classics collection, and that's where I started while learning English and reading the books. Because by that time I already devoured most of the Portuguese classics. And then from there, then with the internet and Amazon, I started to ordering more and more books and getting into fantasy. But I didn't get into fantasy properly until, I was already in my mid-20s when I started reading proper fantasy. I read a lot of pulp and, you know, romances with vampires and werewolves. Fantasy, you know, urban fantasy, it's still fantasy. But, if you asked me like 20 years ago what would be my favorite genre, I would say, you know, historical fiction or sci-fi. And even now I'll probably say science. I would say science fantasy. I think it's right. It's my thing.
I get that. All right. Yeah. So I've got Drew. Yeah, he does follow. I've been disappointed. Yeah, but I don't know if it's just me. I'm just becoming pickier. I have enjoyed some series recently, or bits of series. I didn't quite get the First Law trilogy, but I think I got the Age of Madness trilogy more. I think I understood better what was going on. I think the middle book in The Age of Madness was one of the best books I've read recently. Realm of the Otherlings, again, I was disappointed with the first trilogy, but after reading the whole thing, I understand it better, and it has gone up in my estimation. I think Robin Hobb's character work is exceptionally good. She makes you care about her characters, even though she's not that great at writing antagonists, although she gets better throughout the series. And then a series that doesn't get much praise, but I found, I was talking to Ian a few weeks ago, what did he call it? Apple Pie. It's John Wynne, The Faithful and the Fallen. So it doesn't do anything crazy. It doesn't do anything creative or new. It's just a very sort of fairly generic classic fantasy. You've got the Chosen One, you've got the evil lord, the shepherd that grows to, you know, become the leader and all the stuff. But it's very well done. It's got all the cliches and all the tropes, but it's very well done, and there's nothing wrong with it. I couldn't fault almost anything throughout the series, and it was really enjoyable.
I DNF'd it.
Like I said, to me, there's nothing to go home excited about, but it did nothing wrong. And I think maybe at the stage that I am at, not doing anything wrong is a success already.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, I DNF'd it because I felt, I've read all this before. That was kind of my reasoning. So I just moved on to something else. Which it might be unfair, but it's
I totally get that. It's not amazing, but it's not bad. And at times when you get that, that's like, okay, thank you. I'll take that. I'll have a good time reading it. And I may even reread it at some point. Do you reread many books? Is that?
No, unfortunately, I try to reread at least one or two a year. But it's less and less because there's always new books. But I promise myself, especially this year, is going to be a year of rereads. I'm taking a break. I'm writing because my writing time, it's the same as the reading time. So if I spend too long writing, then I'm not reading. Yeah, exactly. And I am spending a lot more time reading than writing this year. Just one, I'm not in any rush to publish another book because I can't afford it yet. And second, I had to go back to enjoy reading for the sake of reading. So, yeah. Right. So I guess the answer is not as many as I would like. Because I often feel bad if I'm, you know, if I'm spending my time reading something that I'm not enjoying it to the fullest, I kind of feel bad. You know, I could be reading that one that I know for sure I'm going to enjoy.
Yeah.
But I'm always curious about the next thing.
So, sorry, back to your writing. So when you wrote your first book, did you write it because you felt that you had something to say? Or did you just want to write a fantasy story?
Not that I had something to say exactly. I had a story to tell. I had many stories to tell, and I just picked that one because I guess it's been around the longest and had more potential than the rest. But you know, I wasn't not my intention to lecture anyone about anything. I just had the story to tell, and I finally had the time to write it. And
no, I don't mean it like that. I mean it like when I wrote my first novel, I felt like a bit like you, like I had something, a story to tell. I had something to say about what I felt as a foreigner living in London and being surrounded by so many people and yet feeling so isolated. So I wanted to share that. I wanted to tell that story. That's what I mean by having something to say. But then you've created this fantasy world. So whenever you go back to writing in that world, is there something that you want to say, or has that sort of taken a life of its own and you're now exploring different characters or different places that you've created along the way?
It's definitely taken a life of its own. I sometimes worry about myself because those characters to me, they are, well, I know they're not real, but sometimes they feel real. I can hear them talking in my head. It's quite alarming. No, definitely. I did spend years building that foundation. It was kind of like building a puzzle with little pieces, and suddenly the image appeared, and then the players, and now it's, man, I have so many ideas. I don't have time to write them all. I have this whole narrative.
It's,
inside my mind is it's alive. It's a real place with real people, and I just need to go there once in a while, like with a camera, just recording everything.
No, that's the, because are you familiar with Terry Pratchett's Discworld?
Yes.
I think what you're describing is what must have happened to him. He must have created this world, and then whenever he has something to say, he knew through which characters, whatever story he wanted to tell, would work best. And that's why you've got this recurring set of characters that, to me, Discworld is probably the best fantasy series. It's not even a series, because you can pick every book in almost any order. There's no connecting tissue other than it all happens in the same world.
He was a genius. He elevated satire to an art. I mean, that is, I know exactly what you mean, and his books were all very themed. I wish I could do that. Doesn't even come close. But yeah, it was and still is a big influence in my work. But I'm just...
So are you writing a lot of footnotes in your books as well?
No. Like I said, I'm barely, not at all compared. It inspired me, let's put it that way, but I'm not even close. I tried.
I think that, I don't know, like he sold a lot of books, but I think there's a certain lack of appreciation for Terry Pratchett in the fantasy setting. Like I took my fantasy very seriously. You know, I was like Dungeons and Dragons. I want to see dragons in the cover. I want to see my heroes saving the world. And when I got those covers, when I saw those Discworld crazy, funny covers, mm-hmm. it wasn't taking itself seriously. And I want my fantasy to take itself seriously. And it took me, I think it was almost 5 or 6 or 7 books. And then finally it all clicked and I realized how wonderful the whole thing mm-hmm. was. And then I just couldn't wait to get the next one and the next one and the next one. But I think I would encourage anyone that hasn't read Discworld to give it a try. And if it's a bit insane to say to someone, you have to wait 7 books for it to make sense.
No, it's not.
But it's after those, I think it was there's 41 novels. So mm-hmm. if you can wait for 7, the next 34 are going to be so rewarding.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't read about 20. It's kind of a treat that I give myself usually once a year and I read a new Discworld novel. Because again, I discovered Terry Pratchett very, very late in life. So I have a lot to catch up, but bit by bit.
That's one thing. There you go. That's one series I would like to reread. I would definitely like to give it a go. I don't know if I would read it because I've read them in publication order. I don't know if next time I would just take one set of characters and just read the novels mm-hmm. following the City Watch or the Death mm-hmm. books. Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of meeting Sir Terry Pratchett. I've got Feet of Clay. I've got it signed and dedicated by Sir Terry Pratchett. I went to university in the UK, and my university was the first one to give him an honorary PhD. So he came and he did a talk, and he wrote The Science of Discworld with 2 professors from my university, 1 scientist and 1 mathematician. So the 3 of them did a talk and then they did a book signing. So just got there in the queue and, you know, he was there and it was great.
Amazing. Oh, I wish.
That's certainly one of the, I think to me, one of the unappreciated and yet very recognized, but mm-hmm. I think when people talk fantasy, I think not very many people mention Terry Pratchett. He's almost like his own thing.
Yeah, it has its own fantasy. It's not the first name that comes to mind. You think fantasy and you think dragons and, light versus darkness and elves and dwarves. And it's not the first name. But again, it is fantasy and it is a whole new world. And so clever.
Yeah. Are you reading them in order of publication?
No, I started, I did the Watch books and The Color of Magic, of course. And now I will start. I haven't decided if I'm going to do Mort or if I'm going to go with the Going Postal. I haven't. You'll see.
Is Going Postal
or Weird Sisters? Yeah, those are the top 3 on my TBR.
Because Going Postal, Making Money, and Raising Steam all follow the same character.
Yeah.
So is Going Postal the first one in the Moist Von Liebwig series? Just check the publication, because if you want to read Going Postal. I think Going Postal is the first one, and that's a really good book.
I think so. I might be wrong, but I think so.
No. That's a great late entry addition to the cast of characters. That is brilliant.
Yeah, that's usually, Christmas, the days off around Christmas, that's when I read my Terry Pratchett.
Satirical fantasy, I don't know, maybe other than, presumably, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Can be chucked in there.
Don't know, never read that one.
Neil Gaiman doesn't do.
Oh, I can recommend Orconomics. It's a bit of satirical fantasy. the top of my head. I do a bit of satire as well, but it's don't expect Terry Pratchett. There's not a lot, because it is something that I usually go for it and look for, and there's not a lot. Again, names. No. Specifically satirical, no. Apart from those two that I mentioned, no.
So what series have you given up on that you wouldn't go back to for love of money?
Ooh. Let's see. Well, recently, there's several that I would not go back. The most recent one, and really upset me because it was quite the investment, and the Red Rising series. Right. I loved the first book and the second, but especially the first book was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then it just was that book four? I don't know. I lost count, because after the second book, they just started seeing so similar. And the books kept getting longer and longer and longer, but it was just the same thing. I mean, I don't know. It wore me down, and I stopped halfway. And I've been telling myself, well, you should at least finish that book, if nothing else. And I really don't feel like it. So I guess it means, I've given up. It's a bit sad.
I'll tell you my biggest, like, oh my god.
Yes.
The Vampire Chronicles by Anne Rice.
Never read either.
No, Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah.
I watched the movie, mm-hmm. and it was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So I read mm-hmm. Interview with a Vampire, the novel. And then it was The Vampire Lestat. Go, okay, well, let's go there. And mm-hmm. then it was Queen of the Damned. And then I realized there was like freaking 20 books in the series. And these vampires are so unscary. Like vampires are not sexy. Like, I'm not into sexy vampires. I couldn't. Because this whole big romance thing, there's no sense of threat. There was no. It was all a bit. I don't know. And I just checked out. Got the three mm-hmm. books there, and I got zero interest on going back to that mm-hmm. to that world. Because. Maybe there's too much romance. I'm not into romance. It's not my thing.
I don't know. It's been on my TBR for years, and I do want to read at least Interview with the Vampire. I'd like to read, and I love vampires, but I don't know. It's one of those cases where I think I know the story because I watched the movie so many times. Mm-hmm. That again, when I go to pick a book, I often pick a book that I don't know anything about. So, yeah.
Hang on. Let's unpick this, because of late, there was a period of time, maybe about up until 10 years ago, where vampires really were not vampires. Where you had the Vampire Diaries, you had True Blood, the HBO show. Oh, yeah. You had all the stuff, the Twilight Saga,
pains.
And let's be honest here. So you need to unpick this, because
I agree. I mean, vampires, they've taken a hit, especially since Twilight. I don't mind romance with vampires. They're very romantic. As as this character trope, but yeah, I don't like the teenage sparkle good or vampire with a heart of gold. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. But it works for a lot of people, so that's fine.
Right. No, my wife made me watch.
Why don't you like romance?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just too cynical and too jaded. Maybe I'm. I don't know. I think being a stereotypical here and, you know, being controversial, maybe I think in general men mm-hmm. are into that sort of thing. I don't know if that's okay to say anymore these days. That's like, part of that. I think I was brought up in the 80s, mm-hmm. and you know, in those days, boys did this and girls did that, and mm-hmm. you know, and then I don't know. I don't believe in love forever and all that stuff. So I guess I've already failed at marriage once. So my wife now is my second wife, and so on. So you know, all of, you take all those hits through life, all those knocks, and mm-hmm. he shapes you. Mm-hmm. And fun, like romance is not something I long for. It just, it doesn't mm-hmm. fulfill me. I think in general, it's difficult to write believable romance. I think more often than not, romance is a fantasized idea of romance, mm-hmm. And I find it hard to relate to that because I know that reality is so far from that.
That's exactly why it's the fantasy, it's the escapism, it's the idealization, the escape, perhaps. Yeah.
Maybe it just reminds me of my many limitations as a person, and I don't want to be confronted with that. I'd rather escape to. You know, Westeros, or you know, the Discworld. I think the Discworld would be a fantastic society to live in. I think I wouldn't mind living under the tyranny of the patrician. Anyway.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's true. Like, so he's asking Neil Gaiman, mm-hmm. Gabriel Kay. So I've mm-hmm. Guy Gabriel Kay has been mentioned many, many times to me. But in Spain, getting his books, they're quite expensive because I want to read them in English. And for some reason, they're not very, the price is a little bit too high over here. David Gemmell, I've heard about, but I haven't read anything. And Neil Gaiman, I rate his comics more than I rate his books. But what's your take?
I've read Neil Gaiman, yes. Sandman, American Gods. Read some of his short stories. I think it was Trigger Warning. Those were the three main ones, or the three most recent ones. K. Gabriel K. I read Tigana. Very, very good. To really fit. That's a very good book for world building and fantasy. Well, you probably won't enjoy. It's not Game of Thrones fantasy, and it's not Lord of the Rings fantasy. I remember being amazed with how much world building and story he managed to put in one single book. So it's a pretty special one. Not much from David Gamow yet.
I've heard that Guy Gabriel Kay. I think one of his books. Can't remember which one it was. It was pretty much sort of medieval Spain based, although it wasn't, but uh-huh. it had that sort of the Christian kingdoms and the Muslim kingdoms fighting each other type thing. I can't remember mm-hmm. which one of his books that was. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that it's almost like historical fiction with brushstrokes of fantasy.
Yeah, it is a bit of the Renaissance period. Building based on that time.
Yeah, but the problem with these things is that, like, your TBR is never ending, isn't it? What's your TBR like?
I don't know. I have to check Goodreads for that. Most of the stuff I read now, it's ebooks and audiobooks, so it's digital, so at least it doesn't take space. I rarely buy books. When I moved to England, I had to leave pretty much most of my book collection behind. And that was very sad. And since then, I've just carried them on my Kindle. So they were always with me. But yeah, and I must have like 100 by now, easily. unread books on my Kindle. So I don't know when.
That's not a TBR, is it? That's just the sword of Damocles hanging over your head.
I read about 50 books a year, again, according to Goodreads, which is when I have the patience to go and update. So it's not too bad. I mean, I can still get to them in my lifetime if I don't die.
According to that.
I just brought something up. Let me finish my TBR, please.
Based on your average, you'll be done by 2025. I wish I could read that. I'm lucky if I can read 2 books a month. That's obviously the issue of having 2 small kids and everything that goes along with it. I don't know, because like off late, I bought a few books when I was in London over at Christmas, and I still got a couple left that I haven't finished. And I'm starting to feel a little bit of anxiety about having 2 unread books on the shelves.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm trying to talk myself and, relax, you pick it next and, you go through there. But then I got the Kindle and I went to Project Gutenberg, when you got the So then I've always wanted to read the Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. So I've got them on the Kindle and they've been, they're waiting there. So, and it's like, I'm starting to feel a little bit of anxiety.
Books don't go off. They're fine.
No. Like I know, but sometimes, because now the Sun Eater is a read-along with Ian. So we said that we'll read 1 book every 2 months because then we do the live discussion and all the stuff. So I feel like I need to finish this book in May. So when I'm reading with someone else, I feel like, I need to keep up. Mm-hmm. That's why, I think Steve, there were talks about doing another Malazan read along.
Yeah.
And I would love to take part in that, but I need another fantasy series. Like I need another hole in my body at the moment.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, man. I am dreading that one.
You're on board for that one, aren't you?
Yeah.
And is it going to be a full reread for you, or?
For the first book, that's where I stopped.
Right, just like that.
It was one of those books. It was almost a rage read. I had to get to the end just to see if there was a point to all the suffering. To my suffering, reading the books more than it's not. I didn't care about the characters at that point. I was just wanted to understand what the hell I was reading. So there was the first reaction to the writing style and the presentation of the book, rather than the story. I was curious about the story. I wanted to know what was gonna happen. I was invested, but it's such a hard book to read, for me at least. I mean, it's really, really it feels like work. It's not enjoyable. So I'm hoping by joining this this discussion that I'm doing it wrong, because sometimes you have to. Maybe I went into the book, start reading it with something else, with something in my mind, and then the book didn't match, and then Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give it another shot. Let's see how it goes. But I am dreading just to see, if it's going to be work. I don't want it to be work.
The things that I'm curious about it, because I've heard so much and yet so little, because I don't want to know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about how you're just thrown in the deep end, that you don't understand what's going on and stuff like that. But I'm thinking, how hard can it be? Maybe it is.
It's hard. Oh, hello. Okay. Uh, Okay, any book. Hyperion. That's one of my favorite books. Don't know if it's for everyone. What else? Recent reads. Gosh, I'm only thinking about science fiction and fantasy. I'm trying to think outside science fiction and fantasy. And gosh, there's really not much. I mentioned before the Warlord Chronicles, historical fiction, if it can be called that. It's a good one. Tigana. And back to science fiction, fantasy, the Commonwealth series by Peter Half Hamilton. It's amazing. The Night's Dawn as well. I don't know. I can go on and on forever. I don't know. Whenever I'm put on the spot to give out titles, I just draw a blank.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. I think we got Drew's take on Malazan there. But what about more sort of classical literature? I think
classical literature.
Like, I don't know. Like, what would be considered the classics? You know, the great American novels.
I don't know about the great American novels. I can tell you about great Portuguese novels. Os Maias. The Maias, I don't know how it would be translated in English, by Assad Queiroz. Pretty much anything by José Saramago, especially Baltazar and Limunda. It's different. It's not exactly fantasy, it's magic realism.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it's quite late. Brain is fried. It's Friday night. I'm sorry. Yes, the Portuguese classics, Saramago, Assad Queiroz, and one of my favorite classics is Wuthering Heights.
Right.
I know it's not for everyone.
No, I couldn't stand it.
I wouldn't call it a romance either, but it's, and it is a bit fantastical. I like the tiny fantastical elements that it has.
Yeah, back to the earlier romance point that I made, that I don't like romance. And yet, I really, really enjoyed Love in the Time of the Cholera by Gabriel García Márquez.
You did? I've only watched the movie, never read.
I didn't know there was a movie, but I read the book and it did resonate with me. I really, you know, there was that element of your sort of teenage crush that runs away from you. And then you finally get together with late in life. Even though
have you ever read 100 Years of Solitude?
I have read 100 Years of Solitude as well, but I rate Love in the Time of the Cholera above 100 Years of Solitude.
Okay.
I like that notion that he remains loyal and faithful to her from the waist up.
Yes.
That's that one there. No, because I went through a phase where the BBC did a list of like the 100 best novels in history and stuff like that. So it was like, okay, I need to read those. So I did work my way through the list. And yeah, things like Ulysses by James Joyce and War and Peace by Tolstoy. I think that you termed it like rage reads, you know, like I'm going to read these, but this is not working for me, but maybe I'm just not clever enough.
I never tried Ulysses. I think it's another one on my TBR. I gave up on War and Peace, mostly because the character name, at some point I couldn't keep up with who was whom, and this is terrible. To say, but yeah, but I was younger than I was still in my teens when I tried. Obviously, I was not ready.
Yeah,
I feel like reading it again.
When I got to the part where they go hunting and you get 200 pages of the book from the perspective of the dog when they got hunting, I was like, oh, not entirely sure. I
need that's the best part.
Oh, that was the best part. Hey, what do I know? What do I know? But I think like the great American novel tradition, I think is fantastic. Like, you know, John Steinbeck, Norman Mailer, all those books, like Grapes of Wrath, you know, that ending is just gut-wrenching, and it puts you through, you know, all that pain and all the stuff and the way it ends. It stays with you, you know, what I was saying before about closing the book and feeling uneasy, you know, that book leaves you with an image there in your brain that really does make a point. I think I'm almost jealous how the US, in spite of its lack of history compared to Europe, they've created their own myths and they've created their own history very quickly.
It is a gap, I guess. I don't read a lot of American literature, I have to say. Right. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm very European centered. I do read American authors, but again, it because I do prefer fantasy, and fantasy tends to be set in a more European setting. That being said, I mean, like I am reading the Swan Song, and that's set in America. And before that, I read Summer of Night, again, set. And so sometimes I do like to go a little bit outside of what I usually read, and so I go across the pond. But it's not my first choice. It's
right. Not, yeah. And of late, there seems to be quite an influx of Asian-themed fantasy, isn't it?
Yeah. No opinions. That it really doesn't work for me. It's even worse than horror. Like I can't watch manga. I just can't. And I don't enjoy it. I don't understand it. It's just too. I don't know what was that either, but is there's something about it I find it very tiring, and I can't think of a single story set that even mythology. I mean, I love mythology from, you know, always trying to find out. I can't relate with anything more or oriental than the Babylonian, let's say. It stops there. Don't know why. It's just, again, preference, taste.
Because I was talking about this with one of my colleagues at work, and he was saying that, you know, India and China, they've got a richer history than we do. Like the Chinese civilization has got a far longer history and so on, but we are just so European centric that we're not really aware of
everything. Absolutely. Else. It's a whole universe out there, but it never captivated me. Can't explain why. It's just
And it's fair enough, isn't it? Like, there is so much to read and there's so much to discover that you pick and choose what you want to spend your time with. And, you know, back to the earlier point about who's to tell you what you should read or what you should talk about, or what's okay and what's not okay. Really enjoying this, but I'm feeling that any second my eyes are going to close, and it's not because of the conversation or the company, Susanna.
I'm feeling the same. I was like, oh, the brain is getting sluggish. It's like, if anyone asked me for another list of favorites, I'm just going to vlog.
Right.
No, but it's been very enjoyable. and I've it gave me a lot to think about, and I have a couple of notebooks that I'm gonna have to go and check it out. Thank you, Drew. Yeah.
Anyway, awesome. So
thank you so much for having me, for talking to me, and putting up with my opinions.
No, thank you for coming. I think we're gonna call it a day here. So thank you, Drew and Matt and the Fantasy Book Nerd, everyone that came here. We need to find out what's gonna happen with Drew's bakery business, because he was talking about it, but don't know how that's coming along, Drew, if it's gonna be a reality or what, but he was going into that sort of thing.
Okay.
I suppose international shipments are out of the question. But anyway, we'll take it from there. So, all right. Thank you very much, everyone. And we're going to finish now.
All right. And